You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
If I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Monday, February 22nd, 2016. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, senior political editor from the Huffington Post, Sam Stein. On the Nevada caucuses, the South Carolina primaries, both looking forward and looking back. Meanwhile, Antonin Scalia, still apparently dead. No replacement nominated. Are Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio, are they actually eligible to be president? The HPV vaccine has sharply reduced HPV in teenage girls. This is an issue we were talking about 10 years ago, and apparently highly effective in curbing a disease that is a big driver of cervical cancer. Meanwhile, the uber moderate in the Republican race, Governor Kasich of Ohio, defunds Planned Parenthood. And incidentally, public monies are not spent on any abortions, so he defunds only women's health. Meanwhile, Glenn Beck is on a fast, ladies and gentlemen. Mitt Romney waffles. Ben Carson, a sham on top of a sham, surrounded by sham. And the head of the Federal Reserve says it's time to break up the banks. Well, the Minnesota Fed, anyways, says that. And South Dakotans, I'm looking at you, Matt, passed the first anti-transgender bill aimed at children in the country. They should be very proud of themselves. Really vying. I mean, there's a couple of states where you have state legislators who just seem to be vying for some type of, like, it must be some type of subterranean competition to be the biggest a-holes in the country.
It's part of the state fair.
Oh, I see. It's like a regional fair. Ladies and gentlemen, we are back today. Kelly is here. Matt is here. And it appears that Michael is not here today. Apparently, he just didn't feel like coming back from vacation. And I must say, it's a great time to talk about ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring and not sure where to find the best candidates? Well, as a business owner, I can tell you, and this is my business, I can tell you that your company is only as good as the people you hire. Sometimes people don't come in. They just decide, I'm not going to come in. I can also tell you that posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates. When you're short-staffed, there is no time to deal with dozens of different job sites. Until now. Thanks to ZipRecruiter.com, I can post 100 to 100 plus job sites with a single click. I don't know if you're listening, Michael, but you should know I can be instantly matched to candidates from over 6 million resumes. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy interface. It's been used by over 400,000 businesses. You can try it right now for free. Getting the right people for your company is so important. And I can tell you, from my experience even, you should go check this out, even if you don't need to be hiring somebody now, because the best time to look for potential candidates to fill a position, let's say just hypothetically speaking, like a contributor's position on your podcast, the best time to look for that is when you don't desperately need one. You don't want to have to be looking for somebody with just 2 weeks, which also is why ZipRecruiter is so so useful, because in the event that you've found yourself in that situation, you need to do it quick, but you also need to get quality people. Try ZipRecruiter. Get your perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Again, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. I imagine Michael will be back soon. And he's either going to, I don't know, he's going to do his Michael on Monday, maybe on Tuesday or Thursday this week. I'm not sure yet. Thursday night, we're going to be covering the Republican debate. We're going to get to all the results, obviously, and I imagine most people are aware of them from this weekend. And we're also going to say goodbye to someone who I have to admit that we picked on quite a bit over the course of the past, I don't know, it's been a year since Jeb Bush got into the race, and now he's gone. It's a sad time for all of us here at the Majority Report. I mean, not really. Not really. It's actually a very fun time. It's just that it's sad because it would have been fun to have him around longer to make fun of. And I hope people enjoyed that interview with Ian Millhiser about Scalia. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens going forward in terms of whether or not, I mean, it appears now to me that the Republicans are going to cave and they're going to have to hold hearings if President Obama nominates somebody. The question is, who's going to take that nomination knowing that they're going to be automatically rejected? Tough call. Should also tell you, we all want to know what's going on in the world, but who's got the time? I certainly don't. I mean, on this program, we focus on politics. But do I watch TV news? No, never. Too long, too boring, too much like a pep rally or a shouting match full of network bias. Folks, I found a great way to ditch the talking heads, with all due, you know, present company excluded, of course, and get only the news stories you want in short bites and on your time. It's called Newsy, and it's changing the way we get our news. Newsy delivers the stories that you need to know without the shouting, dragging on, or shoving an agenda down our throats. We've spoken a lot about the shoving down the throats here on this program. Yeah. And it's really inappropriate. Yeah. We're all busy, but we need to stay in the know. Newsy videos are less than 2 minutes, so you can get all the news you want in just a few minutes each day. Check out Newsy today. I'm telling you, you'll be glad you did. Go to newsy.com/easy. That's Newsy, newsy.com/easy. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Sam Stein of the Huffington Post on all the questions you have about these primaries, and then we'll talk about it more. I don't know how long we'll have Sam, but we'll be right back after this.
Talking to myself. Will I see again?
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a pleasure to welcome back to the program. He is senior political editor at the Huffington Post. He is the host of my third favorite podcast after, of course, the Majority Report, the audio book of Art of the Deal, which I listen to on a regular basis. And it's Candidate Confessional. Sam Stein, Sam, I gotta say, I had never seen that clip of that guy running for mayor in Ohio where the guy just go, boo, boo, Knopp. And God,
I'm surprised. I mean, you're a very well educated guy. You're culturally fluent, and you've never seen the Boo Ben Knopp clip. That's incredible.
Yeah, no, I was shocked to see it. But just give people just a one sentence summary of Candidate Confessional. It's a great idea, actually.
I don't think a sentence can actually do it justice, but I'll try. Candidate Confessional is a podcast about what it's like to run in an election and lose the election. We've interviewed people who basically don't win about what campaign life is like and what they regret and what they would do differently and the pain that it took on them and their family. And it's illuminating and cathartic for a lot of them.
It's a great idea. I've always wanted to do either a show or a podcast about people who just didn't win other things, like the person who didn't make the U.S. national hockey team or figure skating team. They spent their whole lives. I mean, I'm curious about that. But so it's a great podcast. But let's jump into this because I know you don't have too much time. I got a bunch of questions for you. Okay. I mean, I think by now most people know the results of the caucus and the primary. Trump wins with 32-odd% of the vote, maybe a little more, and Rubio and Cruz basically come in second with 23%, maybe a difference of a couple of tenths of a point. Kasich still in the race, Carson still in the race, Jeb Bush sadly gone.
Jeb's out.
Let me ask you this. All right, I want to talk about this because supposedly Rubio won by coming in second or third or whatever it was. I mean, this guy, talk about a low, talk about the soft bigotry of low standards. why has there not been, even now it seems, there is no rush to Rubio with the big establishment money? It doesn't seem like he's being embraced in the way that you would imagine if Trump is as toxic as they say.
Well, I guess we have to wait and see if all those all the people who funded Bush and his super PAC will now write checks to Mark Rubio. Because, you know, a lot of those people, there's a fair amount of money in Florida, a fair amount of money in New York that was essentially tied to the Bush name. And they, you know, whether strategically or emotionally, they weren't going to send checks to Bush's mentee to, like, you know, run against Bush. But now that he's out of the race, that could change. I think the other thing that maybe explains why these funders aren't running to Rubio yet is that, you know, there is sort of this wait and see expectation for Trump to implode, right? I mean, we're always anticipating that at some point the phenomenon will fall apart, and perhaps these funders feel like that's going to happen organically and that they don't need to be part of it. But on the flip side, at some point it becomes, you get a little too far down the calendar and it doesn't happen, and you're looking at the potential of Donald Trump being the Republican nominee.
But aren't you, like, surprised? I mean, you're articulating sort of this hesitation that's out there. Aren't you surprised there's that level of hesitation? I mean, because to me, there's a couple of things. Like, today there was some type of false start, right, with Mitt Romney endorsing him, where I think you guys, with all due respect, reported that Mitt Romney was going to endorse Rubio and then backed off it, or at least...
Well, we haven't backed off it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this then. If Romney is inevitably going to endorse Rubio, what was he hesitating about picking him for his vice president? Wasn't there supposedly something that Romney found that he found would be problematic?
Well, the question of, first of all, there are biographical details about Rubio that I think a lot of people have touched on or hinted at that could be problematic. you know, his relationship with a very prominent financier down in Florida, Norman Bannon, I think his name is, who essentially got his wife a job, you know, paid a bunch of salary for Rubio, and he has all these interests in the Florida State House. But there's also relationships that Rubio has had with sort of shady figures in the Florida Republican Party that people assume will hurt him in the long run. I think the bigger issue in 2012 was, you know, Rubio is really young and really wet behind the ears. I know Obama's kind of colored our perception about how qualified a president has to be to become, or how qualified a nominee has to be to become president. But, you know, historically, Rubio would be a real outlier here. He's spent a very few years in the Senate. He hasn't really done much legislatively. And in 2012, that was even more obvious. And so I think that was the real hesitation that Romney felt when he was coming around to choosing a nominee. And that's part of the reason why he went with Ryan, who was equally, you know, he's also a young figure, but he had been around for a while. He had authored the Republican House budget, was a well-known fiscal conservative, had done all the national media stuff in a way that Rubio hadn't.
But am I wrong in remembering that it was reported that there was something in his background that was problematic?
That was Christie, who everyone reported had really some shady stuff in his background that made Romney and his camp hesitate before picking him.
Okay. All right, let me ask you this, too. All right, now, Rubio's parents, apparently, Donald Trump is making issue of whether or not Rubio is eligible. Do we know if his parents were citizens at the time he was born in this country? I mean, I'm just curious because it would be hilarious from my perspective if it turned out that Rubio was actually one of these anchor babies that they seem to talk about in the Republican
Party. It would be funny if he was an anchor baby. I still don't think that makes him ineligible to be president.
No, he's eligible. Born. I'm just enjoying.
Yeah. It would be funny. It would be karmic retribution.
But do we know?
Republican Party. I don't know. I should look into that. That's a good point. If he was an anchor baby, that would be a very good story.
All right. Thank you
for giving me a story.
I got another one for you, too. Has his medical records been released, Rubio's?
I don't know. I guess not. I should know these things. You're actually making me feel a little bit bad about that report.
Well, no. This is what I'm here for because, you know, I'd be curious to see if there was any regular medication that a guy like Rubio takes to stay so fit and so focused.
He's pretty focused.
He's extremely focused.
Yeah.
And he loves to drink water.
Anchor baby, medical records. Checking on both.
Loves to drink water. I mean, let me ask you this. Don't you think it's weird that we read a story, I can't remember where that story came out, about 3 or 4 months ago, about how much he loves to drink water? Isn't that a weird story to leak?
Unless it was a Politico story, and I remember it very well, because they went to great lengths to make it something like 1,000 words, when it could have easily just been like 2 sentences.
The guy
drinks a lot of water.
Like a character trait, as if like they wanted to get out ahead of something.
He sweats a lot. I mean, come on. I can't hold that against him. No one. That's not in the Constitution that you have to not drink water.
You're mistaking me. I'm not holding against him. Listen, I've known plenty of people who on their medications, for instance, cause them to have dry mouth. So I'm not judging, and I'm not saying that's why he has dry mouth. I'm just curious. That's all.
Okay. You're just suggesting there might be something more to the thirst.
No, I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm asking. You're the expert.
I am not an expert on that, but I'll look into it.
Well, yes. I have to say, every time I see you, your mouth is completely hydrated.
Yes. That's true. I don't know how I do it. If I figure it out, I'll tell Rubio so he can move on with his life.
All right. Let's move on to the Democrats. I mean, because I had very specific questions for you today. Give me two numbers from Nevada that stood out for you as being really relevant in terms of what we saw in Nevada. I'm curious if there are data points that struck you as relevant going forward.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, there's only two that you should really focus on, in my estimation. I don't have the exact numbers in here, but one was turnout, and turnout was down from 2008 levels. And then the second one was delegates, and I believe Clinton won 5 more, I want to say. which and the reason that these things are important is delegates is sort of obvious, which is this is not anything more than a race for delegates. That's what a nomination process is. And you know, with Clinton's built-in advantages with the party leaders, the so-called superdelegates, Bernie needs to make up a lot of ground when it comes to winning delegates in state contests. And if he's not going to do it in places early on, it becomes a question whether he can actually close that gap in a meaningful way to actually bring this into April, May, whatever. And then the turnout thing, I think, is equally problematic for Bernie Sanders. The premise of his general election appeal is that he's going to bring forth a revolution of support, waves of public activists, political activists who will demand that Congress enact his very ambitious agenda. And these are easy in data points to line up. If he can do that in a primary or a caucus, then his argument becomes more valid. But Nevada and honestly New Hampshire, although New Hampshire is a little bit more difficult to ascertain, but Nevada certainly brings to question whether Bernie has the appeal that he is claiming he has. And I think for Sanders supporters, that's a bit problematic.
I mean, what do you think is behind this? I mean, why do you think? Because the numbers in Nevada were down like 30,000, was it?
Yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question. I mean, maybe we sort of underestimated just how good a politician and how galvanizing a figure Barack Obama was. I mean, you remember 2008. That was a truly incredible primary process. And I would also guess that a lot of it had to do with just total disgust and anger over the Bush administration, where Democrats felt like it was time to turn the page, and they felt really compelled to go out. And you can make the case that maybe there's a bit they're a bit lethargic now, where it's been 8 years of a Democratic president, things have gone relatively well, not exceptionally well, and the notion that you need to go out there and vote for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton isn't as motivating as getting George W. Bush out of office.
Or, I mean, it is. I guess let me bounce another theory off you, is that maybe your average Democrat, maybe average Democrat is not the right word, but that last third, let's say, okay, that the missing third of Democrats that we've seen in these three primaries now, or maybe 25%, don't see a difference between Clinton and Sanders. I mean, I obviously do, maybe they don't. I mean, because under your theory, this could carry over into the general, and I guess I don't want to think that is really what it comes down to.
Well, I mean, I think it's a bit overstated. Turnout's a bit overstated as a metric for how the general will go. I mean, it obviously matters, right? I mean, you need people to vote. But I think once there is, as you note, that sort of Republican counterpoint as opposed to just two Democrats against each other, there, you do see a lot of people motivated by fear, fear of what would happen to the Obama agenda, fear of what would happen under a Republican administration. You can motivate them that way effectively that you really don't get in a Democratic primary. And I think, and I guess this should be my last point because I got to run, but I think that's sort of what you're seeing on the Republican side now, which is a lot of voters on the Republican side are motivated out of fear of what would happen with Donald Trump. And a lot of Trump voters are motivated by fear of what would happen over the continuation of the current status quo vis-a-vis the Republican Party. They hate how the Republican Party has handled itself once controlling Congress. So they have those motivations, and to a certain extent, Democrats don't.
Interesting. Well, I have tons of more questions to ask you about whether or not Kasich.
We should do this again.
We should do this again.
More regularly.
Now, and I also want to, I can't wait to hear Jeb Bush on your podcast.
I put in the request. Let's see what
I bet you did 30 seconds after he said he was going to go home and sleep with his wife or something.
We'll get him on.
All right. Well, I've got some questions to ask Jeb Bush, too, that I'll forward to you. About whether or not he had permission from his from Donald Trump to go home and spend the night with his wife, but that's probably not something you want to ask. Sam Stein, always a pleasure. The podcast is Candidate Confessional. Boo boo Knopf will never leave my mind now. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, man.
Take it easy. All right, folks. I'm going to just do a couple of stories here. You know, I mean, I don't know why I feel obligated to give a full 40 minutes to freebies, Matt, but what is that?
Well, I don't know, but can I ask a question about this turnout thing?
Yeah.
I feel like comparing it to 2008, like obviously there, like he mentioned Bush was leaving office, and I guess like you would kind of expect turnout to be a bit lower now because, you know, it's like continuation of a presidency rather than changing office. And
well, the issue is you got to look at the primary itself, right? I mean, the primary at this time anyways in 2008, and we should say was still a three-way race. I mean, there was maybe around now it became a two-way race. But if I remember correctly, there was still a very healthy intensity for John Edwards, who at the time was the populist candidate. But Clinton and obviously Obama were the big drivers. I mean, it could very well be a function of two people, that there are people out there who just look at Clinton and Bernie Sanders and say, I'm happy with both of them. I'm not convinced there's enough of a difference to get me out. When I'm voting for Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton against Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or Donald Trump, then I'll show up. I there's really no way to know. I guess we will have this conversation, I don't know, November 10th, maybe. We can look back at the polls and we will know. So I don't know that I would necessarily panic about the turnout. However, it does hurt Bernie Sanders because the big argument is that Bernie Sanders is going to motivate new people, more people to come out to the polls in a general election against a Republican. And he has yet to really do that in a way that is like obvious. I mean, you could say like all those votes that Bernie Sanders had, none of those people would have stayed home and it would have been half turnout that we had in 2008 instead of three quarters. That seems like a really hard argument to make. So this undercuts at least one of the arguments about Bernie Sanders. I mean, look, that is why he is more electable in a general than Clinton. Clinton's electability argument does not rest on that, or by design. They have not made the argument that we're going to bring out new voters. The only other number that I would have imagined, and I guess I said two, Sam Stein would have brought up, was the number that I've been talking about since the summer, really, which is when members of Black Lives Matter interrupted the Netroots Nation Forum, which was that Bernie Sanders is going to have to win the African-American population vote to win this nomination. And look, the Nevada caucus, a tremendously small sample of people, but it is what it is. It appears that Sanders won the Latino vote there. Again, small sample. But Clinton more than tripled his African-American support. So when you go into South Carolina, it would appear we're going to see, you know, we have a notion of what's going to happen there. So it's not going to be that much of a surprise. I will say this, Bernie Sanders has a tremendous amount of money for an insurgency candidate and just for a candidate. So he's going to stay in the race. And And maybe I'll put this as a question to the audience. But I wanted to ask Stein, and we'll have him back on, because maybe he's heard some whispers. But I wonder, in the event that, look, I think Bernie Sanders, if you go back to like 2014, 2015, when he was talking about the potential of him becoming a candidate, he would always say, like, I want to grow a movement. So I don't think that he entered this race with, I'm definitely going to win. I don't think he entered this race with, I'm definitely going to lose. I think he entered this race with, I'm going to build a movement. And if I win, great. And if I don't, I'm going to have this movement that we're going to do something with in the Senate. And the power of this movement is increased every time somebody goes out and votes for him. So when you go and vote for Bernie Sanders, let's say, it doesn't have to be just about whether or not he's going to win a given primary. The issue is how much power will he have? And it's not inconceivable. He could win, you know, I don't know, a huge percentage of the delegates and have to deliver those to Clinton and have a say, even if it's not articulated, in who her vice president is. Now, this is going to be a big pick, too, because this is going to be, I mean, you know, it's one thing Barack Obama picks Joe Biden. Unlikely this guy's going to run for presidency, although he seemed to be quite interested in doing that. But in terms of age, well, Hillary Clinton's not going to pick somebody her age, I can assure you. Bernie Sanders would not pick somebody his age either. More than likely, and of course it depends on who it appears is going to be the Republican nominee, but it's going to be somebody who is going to run for the presidency in 4 or 8, you know, or I guess 8 years later. And so this is going to be an important, you know, the orientation of that person is going to be very important. So the value of Bernie Sanders' run is not just in his winning this primary. It is the better he does, the more it sends a message to the Democratic establishment. You know, there's a reason why John McCain picked Sarah Palin, because he saw what was coming down the pike. He knew we're 8 years away from nominating a guy like Trump. I don't know if he actually said that, but that was implicit in him picking Palin, which is, I don't even know I can get out of the convention if I don't pick someone like her. And we obviously are not going to have the same dynamic on the Democratic side, but so, ladies and gentlemen, I feel like I owe this to everybody here, and I'm sorry that Michael can't be here today so that we could mock Jeb Bush together, but I have to say that I think that Jeb Bush has done a service for this country by running, by raising almost $150 million, by having his brother, the former president of the United States, you all remember him, George W. Bush, campaign with him in South Carolina. And despite $150 million, despite the backing of the Republican establishment, despite the fact that this time last year it was all but inevitable that Jeb Bush would be the nominee, he got 6.8% of the vote in South Carolina. And he gives you this, and I will tell you why I'm thankful for this after his speech.
I'm proud of the campaign that we've run to unify our country and to advocate conservative solutions that would give more Americans the opportunity to rise up and reach their God-given potential. But the people of Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina have spoken, and I really respect their decision. So tonight, I am suspending my campaign. No. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, man.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, yeah, is the new please clap. Oh, no. Yeah, yeah, you know, it's true. It's true. I'm definitely suspending my campaign. I want to applaud with absolutely no prodding or having to be cued to do so. I want to applaud Jeb Bush for teaching us that George Bush was such a bad president that if you are even related to him, despite $150 million, despite the fact that the establishment wanted you, despite the fact that everybody thought that you were going to win, George Bush was still that bad of a president that you can't even get 10% in South Carolina in your own primary. Jeb Bush, I salute you. I salute you.
This is not beanbag.
No, it's not beanbag, and you were right about that. You were right about that. Never got the credit. Never got the credit.
I got a lot of really cool things that I could do.
There you go. Do we have that clip of him saying that he was going to sleep with his wife?
Oh, my God.
He said that he was going to go home. I mean, it's very sweet that Jeb Bush, you know, included this in his campaign farewell. And make no mistake about it. The next time you hear about Jeb Bush, it's only going to be in the context of he's the board of director of some company that's probably, you know, was fined by some agency for doing something illicit. Do you have the audio? Okay, let's listen to this.
Sleep with the best friend I have.
Here we go.
Safety landing, if you can imagine. Tonight I'm going to sleep with the best friend I have and the love of my life.
And he hugs his wife. It's a very sweet sentiment. I just wonder if Donald Trump gave permission to Jeb Bush to do that. I imagine he did, but I just wanted to clear the air. You know, we weren't even on the air after Trump. Is that right? Yeah. After Trump had basically said, George Bush is a liar, the Iraq war was a mistake and based on a lie, and he didn't keep us safe. Fantastic. Honestly, I mean, you know what would be nice? What would be nice is to see a Democratic politician have the will and ability to say those things, which are, you know, self-evident.
Samantha Bee had a little bit of a nervous breakdown on her show for those reasons.
A legitimate one or no?
No. Okay. But she played the clip of him, of Trump saying that, and I guess it was like an existential breakdown.
Right. Like, I mean, it's like this. It's
agree with
cognitive
Donald
dissonance.
Trump, what's happening?
Right. I mean, you know, it seems to me that there's just the Republicans, and this is a good time to say this too. Does anybody remember way back when, probably this time last year, when we kept hearing Republicans got the A team this time? 2012. It was a very weak year. That was a very weak year for them. But 2016, that is devastating. This bench is so deep. So deep. I honestly, like, the Republican, and to be honest, I mean, I think when Trump got in the race, I was saying, like, you know, everybody's saying Donald Trump's a buffoon. They're all buffoons. They're all doing ridiculous stuff. I mean, look at, and I got to say, you know, with John Kasich now voting to cut off funding to women's health care in Ohio. It indicates to me that at least he is in this for a while. In other words, he is going to wait until at least his home state votes, right? I mean, because that's what he wants to do. Now, would John Kasich be Donald Trump's VP? I don't see how he would do that. The only thing in my mind that Kasich is doing, I mean, this is sort of the, Kasich would never do this. Anybody who wants to be involved in Republican politics, again, would not be VP with Donald Trump, it seems to me. Now, Rubio seems to be leaving the Senate, and he is leaving the Senate anyways. Maybe he would take it. I don't know. But it seems to me that what Kasich is trying to do is stay in until Ohio votes, which is, when is the Ohio primary? It's not for a while. It's not until March 15th. So you've got Super Tuesday, and it's not, you know, like a, maybe, I don't know, a half a dozen states after Super Tuesday. So if Kasich stays until Ohio, and it seems to me that you don't do that cut off the Planned Parenthood funding unless it's, you know, for the sake of the election, unless it's for Super Tuesday. Maybe he drops out. But, I mean, if you're in at Super Tuesday, why wouldn't you stay in until Ohio? He is running to be Marco Rubio's VP to prove, like, I can deliver Ohio. I mean, maybe he's running to be somebody else's VP, but I don't know why he wouldn't be Trump's. Maybe he would be Cruz's. But the irony is that by staying in until Ohio, he almost ensures that Marco Rubio can't be Trump. I you know, it is such a cluster F on the Republican side. And it's, I'm not going to lie. I don't think I've enjoyed anything as much as this. I mean, I think, like, I like the time that I saw Saul, my son, walk for the first time. And I remember when Mila first read a book. That was very sweet. But this I'm enjoying, I think, just sort of on an ongoing basis, maybe slightly more. Because there's no other, like, I don't have to change Kasich's diapers. I don't know that anybody does. It's possible. But I don't know.
This is why I'm really sad whenever anyone drops out.
Right. Cause
like, my life is getting a little bit less full.
It's true. This is like, it's like watching The Walking Dead when some character you like dies off. All right, we got to take a break. We're going to head into the fun half of the program. And we've got a little, Matt has put together a little audio montage that suggests what Donald Trump really wants. There's somebody he wants to be considered to still be in the race, ladies and gentlemen. And coincidentally, this person, I think we know why he's still in the race. It turns out that Ben Carson, his campaign, and this is going to be very hard for people to believe, is a complete sham. There's so much money to be made for these people. It's just fantastic. It's really fantastic. And, of course, speaking of charlatans, Glenn Beck, I'm going to say three words to you. Fast. And I think if you take a look at Glenn Beck, you could see, like, what's... He's fasting on behalf of Ted Cruz. But the other two words are clay pots. You're just going to have to tune in to find out. We're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920. Oh, just a reminder, folks. The show... almost 98%, 98, really closer to 99%, relies on your funding. 97% of that funding goes to keeping guys like Ben Carson in the race so that we have something to talk about. That's not true. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. It is your funding of this program that makes it possible every day. And as a bonus, we say to you, hey, thank you. Here's another 50 minutes. Here's another, practically another show, stylistically a little bit different. Yeah, similar to probably the first half today. stylistically. But usually we have like a, you know, a deep interview and then we get a little bit looser. And then Michael does his funny voices when he's not, he doesn't have a boo-boo. I feel like if he's listening and I don't make fun of him, he's going to feel bad. He's going to feel like we didn't think about him. So I just, that's why I'm doing it. Yeah. Don't you think he'll feel bad? It's like Jeb Bush, like how he was lost when Trump wasn't in the debate. And he just felt like there's nobody here picking on me. I don't know what to do. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off. Great coffee delivered right to your door. If you buy crap from Amazon, buy it through our link at majorityreportkickback.com. If you don't want to buy crap from Amazon, you want to buy it, but you want it delivered to your door, and you want great prices, jet.com. We also have a link for that at majorityreportkickback.com. You get 15% off your first purchase through jet.com. Go to our link. All right, be right back.